You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. This episode of Agave Road Trip is brought to you by Mezcal Ultramundo. Ultramundo is a mezcal brand owned by a family without any real historic connections to mezcal heritage. Instead, their connection is to nature. They own a 24,000-acre ranch that has been used to graze cattle. It's a beautiful wild place. Everywhere you turn, it's a sea of quiotes. Fresh quiotes, old quiotes, fallen quiotes, just sprouting quiotes. And specifically from Maguey Lamparillo, a variety that takes something like 15 to 18 years to reach maturity. Now, there's a lot to talk about with this brand, but I'm reluctant to do that because whatever I say will divert your attention from what I believe is the truly important story, those 24,000 acres of wild agave. You know, we spend a lot of time in this industry talking about sustainability, but the truth is, any spirit being shipped out of the community in which it's made isn't truly sustainable. The fossil fuels needed to make the glass bottles and to physically ship them aren't sustainable. So, no brand of spirit you're drinking is truly sustainable. I tend to instead look for practices that move us as an industry, move us as a species closer to sustainability. And Ultramundo's harvesting practices are a great example of exactly that. The experts who visited their ranch have suggested that so long as they limit their annual harvest to no more than 80% of what reaches maturity, they'll have a self-sustaining supply of this long-growth agave. Every time I return to Oaxaca, more and more of it is monoculture espadine. Row after row after row of these farmed agave are replacing wildlands where so many diverse plants once thrived alongside so many diverse insects, animals, and bacteria. And I get it. I understand why that happens. And I'm not suggesting we should all stop drinking Oaxacan espadine, but I am saying we need to see more projects like Ultramundo, projects that preserve the biodiversity of our planet. Ultramundo is available now in the USA, everywhere via mail order for consumers, and at wholesale in California for bars, restaurants, and liquor stores. If you believe in preserving wildlands and believe in preserving biodiversity, but still want to drink delicious mezcal, please give Ultramundo a try. Learn more at ultramundo.mx. That's ultramundo.mx. So much of what we do creates a carbon wake that is, given the structure of our modern world, nearly unavoidable. But we can minimize that wake by making diverse choices. Bang.
I am Chao Periwan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the award-winning, critically acclaimed podcast that helps Green Gags bartenders better understand agave, agave spirit, and rural Mexico.
And today we're talking about the one thing that makes everybody drink mezcal.
The one thing, it would be depression? Are we talking about depression? Are we talking about celebration?
Actually, it's so funny. I was just in Bosphorus the other day, and I was trying to convince my new friend Anjan that most people go
Who?
To Anjan.
You need to say his full name.
Oh, I don't know his last name.
Great. Okay. Anyway, we'll put that in the link because he's a known guy.
Oh, he's a really cool kid. Yeah. I was trying to convince him that most people go to Bosra for the beauty of the drinks. And we asked Magali, the bartender there, which I love, and she told him, no, just people come here because of depression.
Seriously?
Yeah.
God, that's funny. That's not what I think of that place. But we're already way, way far away from what we want to talk about today, Chava.
Okay, yeah. So we want to talk about something that it's maybe as controversial as ABB.
I don't know, maybe. So, I'm going to get right to the point because
you clearly are.
Yeah. Like, so the question really is the gusano and mezcal, is it cultural heritage? Or is it just a marketing tool?
Well, and even before we start, can I ask you something?
Of course you can. You've got a microphone. I can't stop you. I could stop you. I've got the off button, but keep going.
We're recording, actually. You press record.
Yeah, yeah.
So my, just making sure, it's a lot of energy. So, have you tried a mezcal with gusano with worms in it? And we're gonna discuss that maybe worm is even a misconception later on. That you found to be tasty.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've tried more than one.
Yeah.
So it's then it's even then important that it's part of our cultural heritage?
God, that's a great question. So, you know, I would say no, but the mezcal geeks, right? The bubble that we tend to walk around in and sometimes be shunned by, they would say it is, right?
Like that it's part of our heritage, or that it's important that it's part of our heritage to respect it.
Yeah, exactly that. That, like, it is... Okay, so this gets back to that whole Pechuga versus Gusano versus barrel aging, like what's allowed and what isn't allowed. And I'm putting, like, there are air quotes around the word allowed. And so, like, to some people it's important. And the truth is, to the vast majority of consumers, it's not important.
Yeah, but we're still going to explore that. So, I just wanted to start with this, which sounds slightly repetitive, but I thought it was an important thing because I've tried some absolutely delightful mezcales with gusano. Like, I was just in Michoacán, had an inakidens with gusano that was marvelous.
Whoa, in Michoacán?
Yeah, with inakidens.
That's really interesting, because when I think of mezcal con gusano, right, my head is solely in Oaxaca, because I don't know that I've ever seen it in a mezcal outside of Oaxaca.
Well, and maybe it's just because we haven't asked.
Well, that's
right.
That's a good,
like, you don't
point.
Go to Durango and ask them, like, hey, can I have your most precious mezcal con gusano, please?
fair. So, okay. So, you know, like, first, let's get to that point of, you know, it's not a worm. People talk about it being a worm. Yeah. It's not a worm. What is it, Chava?
It's a larva.
It's a larva.
But you have the specific species that it is, right? Because that's important.
Oh, that's so important. And people will absolutely remember it. So there's a red one and there's a white one. Those are the species names, red one and white one. You really want the species
name?
Yeah, please. God dang it. Okay, so let's see. The red one, the species name is Comadilla. God, why am I reading it like it's Spanish? I think it's Latin.
That's Latin.
Comadilla,
yeah.
Redden Bacaria.
Oh, Lord.
I'll put this all in the notes. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And then the white one, which is, you know, the one that's commonly found eating the agave, that one is Aigiale. Aigiale. God help me. Hesperiaris.
Okay,
I took 4 years of Latin, by the way.
Yeah, so
this is why I'll never learn Spanish.
And this is what everybody gets to see, admire your marvelous capacities to learn things in
Amen.
General, not only languages.
Amen.
But I do have a question that you don't have in your fun facts that we're going to explore later on. How do people extract those worms from the agave? Or where does those worms come from? Or these larvas come from?
Well, you know, again, there's the red and the white, and the white absolutely comes from the agave, right? And I've had the conversations with a couple of mescaleros, and it was very informal, so maybe they just gave me the blow-off answer, but they said they would just pick them off.
Pick them off? Like they're standing on the leaves, waving at them?
Yeah, exactly. You'll find them in the little crevices, and they'll use, like, tweezers or their fingers if they're easy to reach.
Oh, that's fascinating, because in the Michoacán example that I was telling you about, they told me that they will purposely leave one agave to rot.
And, like, it'll attract them like a lightning rod.
What?
It'll attract the larva.
It will rot, so it will be full of larva.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing this is the agave that had a quiote to it.
Yeah.
So it rots, and then they go to it, and they extract a lot of the worms. And I think that's another important thing, because I think a lot of people tend to see one bottle with one worm, right? And it's sort of like the concentration of the worm flavor, it's understood to be one worm will inform a full bottle.
Yeah.
And what I'm starting to see is that a lot of them have different recipes on how many worms they will put in 20-liter containers.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've never seen, and I don't spend a lot of time looking for mezcal con gusano, to be fair, but I've never seen anybody use as many as Lalo.
Really?
Yeah. Seriously. And again, like, I haven't seen your Michoacán friends. Maybe they put him to shame.
Yeah.
I will say that it's the interesting thing for me is I always see more gusanos per liter in Lalo's stuff. And in fact, I think his bottles tend to have like 5 to 10 in them. And yet, I've never tasted one as subtle as Lalo's.
Oh, it's delightful. It's really, really, really good.
Yeah.
And I think that that's another thing that I don't know if a lot of people know about this, but the worms are expensive.
Oh, that makes sense.
Do people don't know that in the U.S., that this is a very expensive delicacy in my country?
Now they do.
Okay. So, I think that it's funny that this is the conception is like this is a touristy trickery, because it's like it'll be a lot cheaper just to have mezcal singusano.
Well, yeah, though, I think you have... So let's get into that whole, is it a marketing ploy or is it not, right? So without question, it was something that they did for marketing, right? Like when it was commercial, without question, it was used as a marketing narrative by, what was this company? Back in the 1950s, this brand called Mezcal Gusano de Oro. That was how they tried to distinguish themselves from other mezcales.
Okay.
But it's sort of a false narrative as well, right? So this is the story that you keep hearing, is that it's only a marketing tool, and it was started by this guy Jacobo Lozano Paez for Mezcal Gusano de Oro back in 1950, and this is the story that I keep seeing online over and over again.
Yeah, but it's not true.
Well, it's not, and the story, and it was a Chicago journalist, Cecil Adams, who wrote that in a 1999 article, and it's just been repeated ad infinitum ever since, which sort of makes it one of those false facts. Was that a trope? I guess we call it a trope.
Yeah, which the mezcal world is plagued with. Yeah. I mean, every area, every discipline is plagued with those. Yeah. But so which were the originators of this? Which was the first marketing genius that came up with this idea?
Well, it's I don't know. I don't know. But what I do know, the reason I know that this is just wrong is because, you know, he says 1950 when in fact the trademark for the brand, Gusano de Oro, was established in 1948. And then you can go back even further, and there was another brand called Legitimo. Did I pronounce that?
Legitimo.
Legitimo Mezcal de Oaxaca con su propio gusano.
With its own worm.
That's the legitimate mezcal
from Oaxaca with its own worm. Love that brand. We should appropriate that immediately. But anyways,
that's a much better name than Agave Road Trip. But so this brand was trademarked in 1944 and clearly included the worm. And I don't know if that was the first, but in terms of like just digging, doing a little, I mean, hey, Cecil didn't have the benefit of Google in 1999. But, you know, thanks to books.google.com, we can do a lot of digging now and see that was around in 1944.
But this is about brands. Was anybody practicing this that didn't own a brand?
Well, okay. And so that's the question. We don't know the answer to that. But when we talk to our friend Lalo.
Yeah.
Right?
The only authority, the only consistent authority in the world of mezcal.
Right. That's Eduardo, in case this is your first episode, that's Eduardo Anales of La Locura in Santa Catarina, Minas, Oaxaca. Like, so Lalo, we've got a quote from him. I don't know that I actually got it audio, so I'm just going to read his quote.
Okay.
So my theory is that the mezcal with gusano has its origin shortly after the Mexican Revolution. It may also have been made before that, but it became far more generalized after the revolution. I think that it is, that's my emphasis.
I
think that it is linked to the religious parties in the towns in honor of each town's patron saint. I kind of like the idea that there's a patron saint that is a gusano.
Well, it's not about the patron saint being Agusano. It's like you're doing it in honor of the patron saint, which is even cooler because suddenly adding Agusano to the mezcal makes it more special.
Oh. So it's not like I gotcha. The patron saint has nothing to do with the larva, which is not a worm. Nothing to do with the larva. It's just literally, this is something really special in our town. Kind of like a sacrifice in essence, right? Like, this is special to us, so we're going to sacrifice it in your name to this mezcal.
Yeah, it's like killing a goat. Yeah, sure. Why not? I'm happy to say that. But Wait a second. But you also, like, I was reading some of your notes on this, Lisa. I'm just going
to... Somebody has to read my notes.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So you also mentioned something that was really bizarre. That was the Mexican Department of Agriculture. What the hell was that about?
Yeah. And, you know, and this to me gives... Thank you for reminding me of my notes. This makes me think that what Lalo is speculating on has some legitimacy. So the Mexican Revolution was when?
1910 went down, I think, to until 1921, maybe?
Oh, okay, that sounds right, right? So there's this volume
that,
I'm sorry?
That might be very wrong. I don't know.
No, I think that's right. Sure. Okay, 1920 is the year that always echoes in my head.
Okay, cool.
So right around there. So I found this book from the 1950s called, here it comes again,
oh, Lord.
Agricultura Técnica en México.
Agricultura Técnica en México, sí.
Yeah, yeah. So so this is something that the Mexican government sent to all of the farmers. Now, if I understand, and I don't claim to, but if I understand this little piece of Mexican history, in essence, the farms were taken from the colonizers and handed over.
A little bit more complicated than that. Let's just say there was an aggressive plan, distribution of land towards farmers in Mexico during the revolution.
Okay. So then after the revolution, the government probably would have been looking to support those new farmers, yeah?
With ups and downs and a lot of challenges, but in theory, they wanted to support the farmers.
So the edition of this book, of this pamphlet that I found on books.google.com, which may be our second most important source after Lalo, the edition of this book was from the 1950s, but it wouldn't surprise me if the first edition had been back in the 1920s, and this book asked farmers to send in the bodies of the bugs that plagued their various crops.
Oh, wow.
Right. It asked them to send it in, and this is a quote now, placed in a bottle with alcohol, tequila, mezcal, or 10% formalin.
Wow.
Right? Before sending the copies to our office, add inside the container enough cotton or Kleenex to absorb the liquid. In this way, the insects will be kept moist, and in case the bottle breaks in the mail, there is no danger of the liquid spilling out. Now, like, I read this, and I start thinking about the mezcaleros that you and I hang out with.
Yeah.
It's not hard to speculate that some farmer would be like, okay, I've got all of these gusanos, all these larvae growing, living, eating my agave crops. I guess I should prepare this to send into the government. And it says I can use mezcal. So here's some of my mezcal in this little tube. And now here's the little gusano. And then they cap it. So I'll send that off next week.
and they never sent it. And then they...
And a few years later, they're like, oh, or months later. Yeah. Weeks later, they're like, oh, I never sent. I wonder what that tastes like.
Well, not only I want to taste that, maybe they just ran out of, it was a party of the town. They didn't have any other mezcal to drink. And they're like, well, I'd rather use this moments of emergency.
So you know, Lalo never specifically said why he thought it would have been after the revolution. But man, I got to tell you, after finding that book and thinking about what he said, the two sort of dovetailed for me.
Well, and if I, sometimes I hate when I do the speculations because
I
one
love
day,
when you speculate.
One day someone is going to come after us the way I go after people, but
well, they, as long as you flag it as speculation,
okay,
don't
great.
Claim it as fact.
All right. But the other thing is, like, if you think about larger scale agriculture in Mexico, it was definitely a post-revolution phenomena. So if you think about how plagues behave, I'm sure there was more monoculture and plagues started becoming more prominent.
Whoa, hang on. Do that again?
Okay, so, you know, like after the revolution, I'm sure there was a lot of hungry people in this country.
Yeah.
And they were trying to create more larger scale agriculture.
So adding efficiency, which is monoculture.
Exactly.
Oh, that's really interesting.
So you have more worms in the agave for sure.
Because the agave became more susceptible to infestations of larvae, not worms. But
because the wild agave tends to repel that easily. It's not a big problem for wild agave. In general.
Oh.
So maybe that was part of it. I don't know.
Well, and I think the I don't know is a really important piece of this, because the truth is nobody knows. And everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, a lot of people state as fact, oh, that's just a marketing ploy. But here we've got enough evidence to suggest that it wasn't. And we've got a guy who's really, like, you know, certainly for me, is a touchstone of real cultural heritage, suggesting that here's this whole other way to look at it.
And if you want to talk about a marketing ploy, talk about unispecies agave spirits.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
You want
right.
to talk the ultimate marketing ploy that it's not traditional?
Right.
It's agave spirits made with one species of agave.
And the funny piece there is that Lalo suggests that he's the first guy, certainly that he knew of, to do it.
Exactly.
Which is funny, because he's also the guy who is the torchbearer for me of cultural heritage.
So your Tempestate at 55 ABV, most likely the less traditional that you mezcal with Gusano.
Oh, that is such an interesting way to look at it. So, you know, we've been criticized for not having conclusions at the end of our episodes. Oh, yeah, yeah. By Roy, mainly.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, I think in essence in this one, we actually do have a conclusion, which is stop worrying about whether or not Mezcal con Gusano is traditional or not. Taste it. If you like it, drink it. If you don't, don't.
And if you find any other iterations of this, let us know. I was so excited when I found a Michoacán example.
Yeah.
And I'm really trying to push to get someone to buy a chunk of it and make it travel to the United States some way or another. Yeah. So if you guys ever find something anywhere in the Estado de Mexico, Puebla, Durango, Chihuahua, like wherever you find it, please just let us know. And give us the contact of who's making it.
And while we certainly know about all the other bugs, your Chumaline pal and everything that's in it, I think we should just hold that for their own separate episodes.
Yeah, I think they're specific enough for justifying a new episode.
Well, then I guess that's it for this episode, Chava.
Always a pleasure, Señorita Lu.
Right back at you.
Adios.
Hasta pronto.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Peribán. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pitbulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.